Hey everyone, welcome back to the Last Word on Sense podcast. As always, I'm your host Alex Metzger, and making his return to the podcast today, it is the only one and only Brandon Plant from Sense Talk. Brandon, how's it going today? Thanks so much for joining me.
Alex, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on to talk some Sense hockey.
Yeah, it's exciting. I haven't done a Sens focused podcast in a couple of weeks now, and it's probably been too long if I'm being honest, but we were just kind of discussing.
What's there to talk about? I don't blame you, my friend.
Yeah, we were just kind of discussing about how it's a little bit of a sad time that the weather is getting nice here and changing and playoffs are around the corner, which is obviously super exciting for any NHL fan. But once again, the Ottawa Senators are not going to be in that, and they're not even relatively close to that picture, sadly, which I don't know about you, but has really, really made the last couple of weeks for me interesting viewing, because as much as I love watching this team, a lot of the nights I just kind of watch and I'm like, what am I watching this for? You know what I mean?
I feel that, man. I do. I really, really do. Especially last night. I mean, Ottawa played fine. You know, it was a tight defensive game for both teams. The third period opened up a little bit, but, you know, they struggled to score, and that's what happens when you have some key injuries, Stützle, Norris out. But, you know, it's a microcosm of the entire season. I mean, we've been shut out three times by Florida this year already. We were outscored 16-2 against them this year. And the only thing this team is consistent at is letting us down, unfortunately. And I mentioned this in my video last night, but, you know, and let me know what you think about this, but I think the team plays not like a team, but they play as individuals, I should say. There's no cohesion. There's no unity, so to speak. And they don't really seem to have a direction or an identity, right? Like under DJ Smith, they were, you know, the grindy team that's going to play every game. And as, you know, as the same, they're going to put in the same effort every game. Obviously that tailored out in the last year of his tenure. But ever since, I mean, the last year of his tenure to now, there's really no identity. It's just a mismatch of talented guys that can't seem to put it together. And I assume we'll talk about the coaching later, but that is why it's so important to get the right coach, because you need the right captain to steer the ship, right? And right now, Jacques Martin is doing the best he can, but what do you want him to do in half a year, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting discussion too, because it's weird. Sometimes I watch this team and, you know, one of the things I promised myself not to do for March or April of this year is, obviously, there's stuff you can take away, individual performances. We're going to do that today. But the past two or three years, I felt like all the time we got, as a whole in the Sens community, really down the rabbit hole, oh, look at all this momentum they're carrying over. This is really going to come into next year. And I promised myself I'm not going to do that this year, which I am going to stick to. But I kind of get what you're saying, because I watch this team and some nights they look more improved. Like they look like they're playing defensively responsible or more defensively responsible, I should say. And it's a good thing to see. And then I kind of watch and it's like, well, they just kind of look lost offensively. Like you figured out part of the defense for 10 minutes at a time. And now you just completely forget how to play offense. It's like, I get you're not going to dominate 100% of every game, but it's like, there's gotta be some nice marrying of the two here. And then there's other games like the other night where it's like, yeah, you're down early against Florida, 2-0, 2 minutes in. And it's just a mess absolutely through on all parts of the team.
Couldn't agree more. And look, I mean, it all starts with goaltending. I mean, there's a reason why teams in the playoffs that go far usually have either an established top goaltender or a goalie on a run, like Vegas, for example, with Aiden Hill, right? So you need a strong goalie. In Ottawa, I think Korpisalo can bounce back. I think Forsberg's had great years. It's not a hot take to say that this year the goaltending has let us down. When 21 times this year, four games in a row before last night's loss to Florida, they've given up a goal in the opening shot or two. I mean, yeah, we can talk about the defense being skewed, the offense, you know, not being able to put the puck in consistently and not back-checking and helping the defense. But when the goaltending a quarter of the time is allowing the goal within the first 5 minutes on the opening shot or two, it's impossible to even get into a rhythm. So I'm not, you know, using the goalies as a scapegoat. The players on the defensive and offensive side of things, like you've already alluded to, plenty, and I mean plenty of issues, because this is years and years of non-development in that regard, right? They were kind of given free range, and that's kind of the consequence of that. But the positive of that, just to give kudos to DJ, is these are still great hockey players, and you can still work with that. But going back to the goaltending, once again, when you don't have good goaltending, good luck winning games, good luck getting anything going. So Once again, just looking at the goaltending, looking at the defense, looking at the offense, nothing is clicking. And obviously, I think ultimately, always it starts with the back end. If Ottawa could just get a goaltender back there, to help out Korpisalo, I think Forsberg, and we'll talk about this later. I think Forsberg, with 1 year left, he's the true backup, frankly. I think he could bounce back for sure, probably somewhere else. He's the easier contract to move. So you bring in somebody there for Korpisalo to help steady him, maybe relieve his workload a little bit. That would be a big bonus because if you have goalies that can be dependable, usually the rest of the lineup can play more comfortable. Until that's fixed and the new coach is brought in, I have a lot of questions. But I think that's for the summer. And I think we can see moves that, in head coaching, with goaltending. I think if those two things are addressed, everything else should probably fall into place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's they have a really interesting decision to make, I think, this summer, because as you said, like I was on talking to someone on Twitter the other day and they made a good point. I forget, I apologize to the person, I forget who it was, but they made the point that it's probably been understated of just how bad this goaltending has killed the Ottawa Senators. And again, I know it's really easy to just point at the goaltending, but as you said, like so many games, they're just getting scored on the first or second shot. I was taking a look at Evolving Hockey the other day, and the Senators' goaltenders rank dead last. That's Jonas Korpisalo. Fifth last, that's Mads Søgaard in a whopping six games. And 10th last, that's Anton Forsberg in goals saved above expected. And if you change that above average to change the stat a little bit, Jonas Korpisalo is third last. Anton Forsberg is fifth last. And Mads Søgaard is 25th last. So that's not quite as bad, but like you still have two goalies in the top five, no matter what statistic you're looking at. It's basically cost them well over 30 goals this year in terms of shots that advanced analytics deem an average goalie would save. And that maybe is the most frustrating part is like no one on this fan base or team is asking anyone to be peak Andrei Vasilevskiy in net. No one's asking for the hamburger run or anything like that. They're just asking for 907 goaltending.
Average.
And
Just give me average.
literally, and this team would, I really just would love to see what this team looks like then, because I do think it is probably fair to say that both A, you probably play different in your own end and with less confidence if you're not confident that any shot is you're giving up is not going in. And B, you probably do feel like you need to cheat for offense sometimes when it doesn't matter how well you play defensively, you're letting up three goals on nine shots or whatever to start a game in the first 10 minutes. So I do agree that I think there are genuine questions about the roster and the coaching decision is going to be huge this offseason. And I keep going back and forth between like, you can't run it back with the same roster, but also the goaltending has sunk them so much that I would love to see them just try and figure out how to get league average goaltending and see what this team can do.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, look, you said it yourself with the advanced analytics, but if you just look at the basic stats, I mean, Korpisalo on a good night has like a 900 save percentage. Okay. I mean, if you just look at the basic stats, it tells you all you need to know. And I don't want to put all the onus on the goaltending. I mean, obviously, bad play in front of them leads to goals as well, obviously. But as you just mentioned, and especially when I was looking at this a month or so ago, I'm sure it hasn't changed too much. Shots from distance, 50 feet or so. Korpisalo, especially, but Forsberg as well, they're both bottom five or bottom 10 in the league for shots from 50 feet out for goals. So that tells you all you need to know. And what's more weird about that, when I did a deep dive, is Korpisalo and Forsberg are also kind of decent in tight. So I don't know what it is. It could be positioning. It could be the goalie coach. They did change the goalie coach midseason. But I also, once again, I don't want to throw only the onus on the goaltending. There's bad habits in front of them. The forwards don't back check. The defenders, I mean, there's a mismatch of defenders there where, just like the rest of the team, there's really no identity. You don't have a true defensive, rugged defender there. You have Artem Zub. I'm wearing my Zub hat, by the way, to everyone listening. Shout out to Zuby, who's fine. He's your second pairing right guy. But then you have Chychrun and Chabot, who both kind of play the same role. And Sanderson obviously is just an elite defenseman all around. So what I mean by we don't have a true defensive defenseman is we don't have a true guy that stays in your own zone, will throw around the body, and who's been around the league for a while. Zub is fine, but he's not that guy. He hasn't been in the league for a while. He doesn't throw around the body like a Radko Gudas, for example. And he's a fine defender, solid for the second pairing, but we need a guy for that third pairing, whether that's Tyler Cleven or somebody brought in through free agency, to bring some tenacity, to bring some grittiness to an otherwise, frankly, soft group. We need to bring some much more grit, especially in that back end. Even in the forward group, I mean, Tkachuk shouldn't be the only one fighting always. And speaking of the forwards, they don't back check. You have a lot of forwards that just get lost around the boards, they lose the board battles. So it's definitely goaltending, no doubt about it. But, unfortunately, the bad habits that these forwards and the defenders developed, so to speak, over the last couple of years will be hard to shake off for sure. But the most important thing, and I always mention this in my videos, these are talented, talented hockey players. I mean, this franchise, this roster, I should say, had expectations to make the playoffs and make some noise going into this year by many because of how talented that roster is. People didn't just say that because they wanted to say it, right? So there's clearly a good group of, talent here. They just got to gel them together and find that missing piece or two. I always look at Carolina or Florida, for example. They had talented rosters with a lot of good players, good goaltending as well, which is the only difference, but otherwise similar because they couldn't put it together, but they had talented players. Then they brought in the right coach. And guess what happened? They started winning and winning and winning. So it starts with good goaltending, pardon me, long day. Sorry for the mix up there. And it is for, and of course, pardon me, it involves coaching. Stumble my words there, sorry guys, but you get the point. Goaltending and coaching, biggest priorities, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the two biggest decisions they have this offseason. And I think the thing that frustrates me so much about how this season has gone is it's compounded by, it's not like in years past where ever all eight playoff seeds have been clearly locked up. You know, like 2 years ago, I think it was all eight Eastern Conference teams had finished with 100 points or more. It's like, okay, you're never going to catch those guys. There is an active race to see who can lose as many games and still make the playoffs for Wild Card 2 right now between Philly, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Washington, and the Islanders. So it's like that wild card spot looks like it might be claimed at like 90 points. And it's just, it was so sitting up there for the taking. And obviously, you know, we're way past that now. But it's just that I think is kind of the knife that digs a little bit deeper. But it'll be interesting to see what they bring in, because one of the things I did actually have on my list, you know, aside from the goaltending, was I still feel like, as you mentioned, bringing in the right depth pieces this offseason is going to be key. Because I think a big part of the struggle for this team is if the top guys aren't doing everything he can. And I don't mean that as a negative. There's just some nights Tim Stützle is not going to score every night. Brady Tkachuk's not going to score every night, right? You're going to need your depth. And I think part of the problem with how this roster has been constructed in the past couple of years is, you know, Pierre Dorion loved to go big name chasing. And that made for a lot of excitement. And it brought in a lot of good players. Let's be honest. But I think sometimes, and especially recently, this team is focused on too much of the big name chasing at a high dollar figure and have forgotten about the depth of the roster. And that depth of the roster, not only just when you're playing with a full roster, but especially as soon as you start to get injuries, like we've seen this year with Norris going down, Thomas Chabot's missed a bunch of time. You know, Tim Stützle's out right now and it doesn't seem super serious, but again, he might miss the end of the year just because what's the point of playing him at this point,
Yeah,
right?
for sure, for sure.
As soon as those guys start to go down, you need guys to come up and play. And that's been the most evident thing to me is that the Ottawa Senators have had a hard time finding guys both in free agency, but also just, you know, through their own prospect pool to help come up and make a big difference. You know, Ridly Gregg has had a great year this year. Shane Pinto looks great, and that's all well and good. But, you know, I was looking at some of the guys that they brought up recently, and you know, Ostapchuk and Gervenchi. Even, you know, Matthew Highmore, I wouldn't call him a prospect by any means, but you know, he got a cup of tea with the team and just none of them really seem to click. You know, there's parts that you like about their game. There's a lot of parts that are like, yeah, it just doesn't look like he has it. And that's okay. But at the same time, it's like if you're a team trying to make the playoffs, you need to have 14, 15, sometimes even 16 NHL ready forwards at any given point in the year. And that's just something that I don't think they've had for a long time. And I'd be really interested to see how they approach it this offseason. And I've talked about it a couple times on this podcast that I feel the improvements they've made to the front office in terms of beefing it up and adding more people to that front office should help that, because I think that was one of the Ottawa Senators' big weak points when they had a really small front office, was pro
For sure.
scouting to get their depth roster rounded out.
Yeah, cannot agree more, and I'm glad you brought that up. You never like to see somebody lose their job, but Murphy and Clark, the former pro scouts, were fired in the last week. And as you just said, you said it perfectly. It shouldn't be much of a shock considering the track record of pro players brought in. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. Depth has always been an issue for this team, even going back before Pierre Dorion. I mean, ever really since the beginning of 2010s. We're talking like some fringe guys that have had a good year or two, but nothing consistent in the bottom six. You look at teams like the Colorado Avalanche, Brendan Duhaime, for example, former Minnesota Wild guy. That's an exact type of player Ottawa should be going for. Physical guy, speedy guy, a gritty guy, a guy that's going to get in the head of the other player, can also score a little bit as well. Ryan Lomberg from Florida, another solid bottom six guy, can fight, can score, can skate. You know, they bring in, you know, they. You look at the bottom six, it's very clear they have a vision. They want to have grit there. They want to have tenacity. But you can't just have that because then you don't have the scoring. You need to bring in both. And there's so many players like that around the National Hockey League these days because you won't survive. You're just a true enforcer. And, you know, for some reason, the enforcers we bring in, they can't win fights anyways. But that's another story. But, you know, I'm all for fighting. I'm a big fighting guy. I think there's a place for it in the game. But I also think you can't just be the fighting guy. You need to bring more than just fighting. It's not the early 2000s. It's not the late or the early 2010s, I should say. It's not the mid 2000s anymore. This is, you know, the 2020s. I mean, this is a fast-paced game. So I couldn't agree more in terms of the depth, particularly the fringe NHL guys, the 13th, 14th forward. I mean, when Zach MacEwen and I look, these guys are better than me in every facet of the game. So I don't mean any, you know, disrespect, but objectively speaking, when Zach MacEwen is your option, or you know, of course, Jiří Smejkal, who I thought was going to be good. He's looked decent at times. You know, Bokuei Mamah, Matthew Highmore, they're fine players. They can come up for a few games in a pinch, but these are not guys that can play, frankly, 50, 60, 70 games as your fourth line or third line guy. They don't bring enough offense. I'm sure they're good guys, good for the locker room. I like, you know, MacEwen and I like Mamah and Smejkal. I think they're good players. Highmore, they all bring different aspects of the game. I think Highmore is a great skater, for example. I think Mamah, you know, he's a good fighter, for example. But you need to bring more than just that one thing. And for some reason, Ottawa and their depth players, they only bring one thing. And when you already have a guy like Parker Kelly, who's a prime example of he brings one thing, which is energy, but that's all you need from a guy like that. Mark Kastlik, he only brings one thing, faceoffs, but that's all you need from that. But the other four positions in that bottom six, you have Joseph, you have Riley Gregg. Okay, those are two scores. You need two more because you already have enough. You have enough of the energy guy and faceoff winning guy. Get a guy that can fight and score like a Lomberg, like a Duhaime. And I know they're not easy to get, but you got to target a guy like that. You got to get a guy for that third line on the wing. And most importantly, as you already mentioned, the 13th and 14th forwards and the next man up in Belleville. Yeah, if the next man up in Belleville is MacEwen or, you know, Matthew Highmore, that's fine. No issue with that. The issue is if that's your 13th forward, because you're going to have injuries. And you're telling me MacEwen or Jiří Smejkal, who I'm a big fan of Jiří Smejkal, but let's be objective about this, or Matthew Highmore, they're not going to be able to step in for 10 games in your bottom six and provide offense. So I think that's a point that's really getting lost in the sauce, so to speak, is that, you know, no one really understands the importance of the bottom six. I think defensively, I think if you really look at Ottawa's depth chart defensively, there's some good NHL guys in the AHL. So I think Ottawa has done a good job defensively speaking with depth. Jacob Larson, Madden Paulo, Tyler Cleven, Max Ganett. Those are four guys who can call, you know, they can be called up in a pinch, play 5-10 games or so. I don't have an issue with them. But if you look at the forwards, I mean, that also goes to the lack of depth in terms of our draft picks now there, our prospects. I mean, Tyler Boucher has been dealing with an injury for seemingly forever. Yarventi, unfortunately, gets injured quite often as well. Ostapchuk, as you mentioned, this is a guy that probably will compete for a spot in that bottom six next year with Kastlik because you can't have two of those guys in that bottom six. Ostapchuk won't bring enough offense. So I think it's time to change the philosophy, particularly with depth players. And I think with the, you know, the pro scouting guys that were, you know, what do you call it, fired, so to speak, in the last week, it shows that there's going to be a change of direction, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Like, there's just, I get their fan favorites, or good guys. Like, I don't, no one's disputing that, but like, there's just too many guys on this roster, as you said, that just kind of do one thing and that's all they really bring, And even like Castlick, I really like Castlick's game down the stretch here. And, if you're telling me he's your 12th forward and he's clearly the 12th best forward on your team, I think you have a decent forward core. The problem is he's being used on the third line at times because Dominik Kubalik has been so unplayable at different times in this year, and again, just the injuries kind of force him up. But like right now, their third line is Boris Kachuk, Mark Kastelic, and Parker Kelly. I hate to tell you, but that's probably an average to below average fourth line, let alone a third line at this point, so yeah, it's just a bunch of guys that their whole bottom six. It's like, if you told me they're not coming back the next year, and bottom six right now, I should say, and that's without, obviously, with Norris and Stützle out. It's like, if you told me none of those guys are coming back, I'd be like, yeah, like I like a few of those guys, but it's not the end of the world. And so it'll be interesting to see. And it is the one thing I did note, and I think it is encouraging at least to see, is in a very small sample of what this new GM group and ownership group has done in terms of looking for bottom depth players, is Boris Kachuk is someone that they snagged off of waivers at the deadline, and I really liked his game quietly. He doesn't have a ton of point totals, which is unfortunate, but not the end of the world. He's got 4 points in I believe it's 14 games possibly with the team now, but he's playing really well in his own end for the role he's being used, and the team's winning their game when he's on the ice. So he is currently top of the team in expected goals for percentage this year. He is ahead of Shane Pinto, although Shane Pinto has 20 more games played, so still very impressive by Pinto. And he is also, I believe, second in Corsi for percentage, third behind Kachuk and Giroux, which is a pretty
Pretty good
good
numbers.
two guys to be. Yep, exactly. So that's at least, I think, encouraging in terms of, do they need to keep Boris Kachuk around specifically? No. If they can get him on a good deal, sure. Absolutely. Like if it's a close to league min deal, I have no problem with it. But finding guys like that can help win their matchup when they're on the ice in a depth role, I think is very important. And Kachuk is not the biggest guy in the world, but he plays with some of that bite and that snarl that you were talking about for the bottom six. So I guess if you're trying to take a positive out of it, that is one thing where it's like, okay, like one of the guys that this management team clearly identified because he wasn't on the roster before has worked out well. So now it's about expanding that and finding that for four, five different players with some of the money that you have freed up this summer.
I don't want to toot my own horn, but I called Boris Kachuk being a very solid player for Ottawa, and it does make sense. I mean, if you know hockey, it just makes sense. He got dropped by the second worst team in the National Hockey League, okay? He was put on waivers. That has to be, pardon me, a kick in the gut for a guy. So when he was picked up by Ottawa with a true opportunity in the third line, the fourth line, really even potentially the second line, a lot of positions are available for Kachuk to take advantage of. He's taken advantage of it. And I mean, look, when you're hungry, you're fighting, frankly, for your NHL career. This is a talented guy. Remember, a first-round pick as well. Played for Team Canada at the World Juniors. This is a good guy for that fourth line. He brings a bit of offense to that fourth line. But that fourth line, before they had, to be moved up to that third line because of the depth issues right now, they were playing so well. Remember that, guys, right? They were going off. They had like 8 points in the first two games together. So obviously, you can't expect them to keep up that pace. But I mean, a goal or two, every 3 games or so, I think could be something to get used to from that third or fourth line with those guys. I mean, once again, Taslik, cheap contract, wins faceoffs. I don't see the reason to trade him. Kelly, he's completely changed into the player we expected in the second half of the season. Definitely don't get rid of him. Boris Kachuk, he's an RFA, so all you really have to do is qualify him. And you know what? Guess what? If he's not your 12th forward, he's a fantastic 13th forward that can be filled in a pinch. This is a guy with, like I already mentioned, offensive skill as well. So he can go on the third line for a couple of games. That's what you want on there, as a 13th, 12th type of guy. So I couldn't agree with you more that Boris Kachuk has been somewhat of a success story since getting claimed here from the Chicago Blackhawks. And you know what? We need more of those, like you just said, for sure. I think with Boris Kachuk, there's a lot of potential there. But as well, once again, you do need that established third line guy as well. I think we thought Kubalik would be that, but I think you need a mix like a Brandon Duhamel or whatever, for example. of skill and grit. Because, Ottawa, they play a physical game. I don't see that changing with a new head coach. They like to throw around the body. The way the team is built and the forward core that is, anyways, they have a lot of guys that like to throw around the body. So they should play to their strengths, bring in a guy that can do both.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, like I just, kind of to our depth conversation, we'll put a bow on it here. Maybe, Parker Kelly again, like he hasn't been brutal or anything like that this year. Like he's been fine, but every team has a Parker Kelly. And if he is your 12th forward, sure. If he's your 13th forward, that's even better. And if he's your 14th forward, who when two guys go down, he's coming in the lineup to add some depth, that's even better. And I'm not saying they're going to be able to build something like that out in one summer, but they need to start working on it. And they got to start using, obviously, I think some of that $5 million that Tarasenko had this year and the $2.5 million that will be coming off the book from Kubalik as well. And that's before, who knows if they make any other moves. They got to figure out what to do. But unfortunately for the Ottawa Senators in terms of cap space, they might not have as much as you think, because one of the guys who does need a raise is Shane Pinto at 775K. Obviously, we know he missed half the year, signed that 1 year deal. There's been some quotes in the media from Pinto and his team that he would really like to sign long term and he would like to get it done quick. I believe that he probably doesn't want to let something drag on. I think he's playing the right media game. And in fact, I think he's done a really good job the entire time since he's been back of just saying the right things, doing the right things, kind of approaching it the right way. I'm really curious to see what the team does with Shane Pinto here, though, because I do think if you can get him at a reasonable contract long term, he is the perfect player to be taking a gamble on for a long term deal. And I know people kind of, shake a little bit when they hear it, shades of, especially for maybe of a middle of the roster player like Pinto kind of is. He's not a first line guy, but I think people are automatically just kind of get like Colin White stuck in their head. And I will still defend that Colin White contract to this day. Yes, he did not develop as we expected, but the buyout of it was so cheap, it did not matter anyways. But Shane Pinto is, I think, I don't know if it's quiet or not, but I feel like it is kind of quiet, having a very, very, very solid season since returning. He has 26 points in 37 games, which is an 82 game pace of 57.6. So he's in that 55 to 60 point range, which is would double his career high basically, or just almost double it. But what's been even more impressive to me about Shane Pinto's game is, again, just he has been one of the few players on this team outside of the top two or three that have been playing very good analytically as well. He's leading the team, or he's second in the team, I should say, only behind Gachuk, as previously mentioned, in expected goals for percentage. And he's not getting the easiest usage either. He's starting a decent amount of his shifts in the defensive zone or in the neutral zone as well. It hasn't been, just loaded with offensive starts. I think he's a little under 50%, which there's guys up near 60% on this team. So I've been really impressed with Shane Pinto's game. And I'm not really sure what the contract looks for him, but I would be certainly okay if the team explores a longer term deal with Shane Pinto.
Yeah, you said it well. I mean, I've been very impressed as well with Shane Pinto, particularly since he didn't have a camp really. He especially did not have a preseason, didn't play any games, jumped right into the fray and went off. Like, he's been doing very, very well. Shane Pinto is a guy that I agree you take a gamble on. I just realized I didn't even mean to do that, but you do take a risk, I suppose, with a long-term deal with Shane Pinto. But I also want to say this. There's less concern about losing Shane Pinto than other players, in my opinion, and I will say this very clearly why. Unlike other players, Shane Pinto, I think, frankly, will want to sign with Ottawa more than the average player because of how Ottawa dealt with the situation with the betting quote-unquote scandal, that whole thing that happened back in October, right? Elliot Friedman noted this when all that was going down, that Shane Pinto and his camp, the family, the agent, were very appreciative of the Ottawa Senators not, running a media campaign against Pinto to lower his number, ruin his reputation. That is something that goes a long, long way. Obviously, us, you and I, not in the business, that just seems like common sense. But no, this is a business, and there's a lot of sketchy or frankly gross things that GMs will do to help the bottom line. That's one of them. So the fact they didn't do that, I think, they use Steve Staios' quote and Michael Andlauer's quote, best in class. That was a very classy thing to do. And it will go a long way with Shane Pinto and will incentivize him, obviously, to stay here with his friends, but more so to stay here with the organization because he can trust them that they will have their back, or his back, I should say. So for Shane Pinto, I mean, you also have to see what his AAV ask is. I mean, I'm not going to throw numbers out there right now, but if we're talking like above 4 to 5 million, I mean, I don't know how I'd feel about that for like 5, 6 years. But if you can do like a 3-year deal between 3 to 4 million, I'm very, very comfortable with that. Probably on the higher end, closer to 4 or so, I think it would probably make the most sense if it's more than 3 years or at 3 years. But if we're looking at a bridge deal, 2 years, you're probably doing something between $3 to $35 million, and then he gets a payday after that. Both options are good because, once again, unlike most other players, I think Pinto can trust his organization, trust that they have his back. And once again, the fact that in probably one of the lowest moments of his life, the organization that did not owe him anything, and they were already in a contract stalemate at that point, they didn't owe him anything, they were already having a dispute, so to speak, and they still had his back, says a lot. So I'm not worried about him leaving, unless the Ottawa Senators screw the pooch in the future and let him go. So I'm good with a bridge deal, but I would prefer a long-term 3 to 4 year deal as long as it makes sense money-wise.
Yeah, I think the only reason you go long term is because you feel you can get extreme value out of it in the
Yes.
mid to late contract with a guy like this. And yeah, I think if it's not a long term deal, I doubt we see another 1 year deal. I bet it's probably 2 to 3 years. At if it's 2 years, $3 million maybe. If it's 3 years, maybe it's closer to four, as he said. And then, if they look at like a 5 or 6 year deal, again, I agree. I think if it's 6 years, I would be comfortable like a 4.25 AAV, something in that range.
Yeah, for sure.
I totally understand if Pinto wouldn't want to accept that, and wants to, trying to figure out a better word to say bet or gamble, but bet on himself. But yeah, I think you make a really good point of, and I said it a couple times on this podcast too, is I think both the Senators and Pinto's side handled this as best you could. For
Yes.
what was clearly a stupid mistake, a bad decision. We all know that. No one was defending him. Both sides handled it professionally, said the right things, did the right things, kept everything in-house. There was no public complaining to the media on a back channel or anything. It was really, really well handled from both sides. And that was nice to see from the player who clearly understood what he did was wrong and has clearly just taken it, gone in stride, and gotten better from it. But also from a team that, let's be honest, for a full decade plus, this team was known to just trying to kind of drop pipe bombs, so it
You
was nice
campaigns
to
all the
see.
time, all the
It
time.
Exactly. So it was nice to see that as a change in philosophy from both sides. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do this summer, but I'm sure there'll be lots to discuss. Only other big thing I wanted to touch on as I think we kind of head into the summer here is I want to kind of pick your brain on what you think the Sens should do with Jacob Chychrun and maybe the defense corps in general, but Jacob Chychrun obviously because he is 1 year left on his contract, and I believe he can probably sign an extension then on July 1st, just knowing how those rules work. But I'm really curious to see what the team does because I would be really surprised, I think, if they sign him this summer. I think they probably wait, leave it to go into the season, and make a decision in season if they want to keep him and get a deal done then, or if they feel they need to move him because, again, God forbid you have another season like this, bigger conversation picture. But I'm kind of torn on what they should do with Jacob Chychrun. I really like the player, and I think he's had a very solid year this year as well. He started off amazing. He had a bit of a cold streak in the middle there where I think there was rightful complaints about his game at time, and he definitely kind of looks like he got lost in his own end at times. But I think overall he's done everything you could have hoped for over a full season. And the most encouraging thing, in my opinion, is just how healthy he has stayed over this full year as well. So, what have your thoughts been on Jacob Chychrun this year, and kind of, what are you looking to do long term with him, and the future with him in the Ottawa Senators?
Well, I've been saying this since the Jake Sanderson extension. There's two teams in the National Hockey League that have two defensemen making $8+ million. That is your Ottawa Senators, Shabbat, and of course Jake Sanderson, and the New York Rangers, Trouba and Adam Fox. There's a reason for that. Teams can't afford to have multiple defensemen making $8+ million. The Ottawa Senators are not going to be a team with three players making $8+ million in the back end, on the blue line, I should say. So what do you do from there? Well, it comes down, between Thomas Chabot, Jacob Chychrun, and I might get some flack for this, or it might be a little shocking to some, and Josh Norris. Because with Josh Norris, you have Riddy Gregg and Pinto competing for that spot on the second line. Norris's injuries, inconsistency to stay healthy, not necessarily his fault, so to speak, but definitely a concern, makes him a questionable piece of the future. So if you move Norris and decide to run with Gregg and Pinto as your second line guy and third line guy, and those two would be far more affordable than Norris and his nearly $8 million contract right now, you get that money off the books. Well, Jacob Chychrun, I don't know necessarily will command $8 million, but if I don't think he wants to go anywhere else. He cried when he got when he got traded to Ottawa. This is where he was born. This is where his family is, or not born, but this is where he grew up. He was technically born in Florida, I believe, but this is where he grew up. This is where his family is, where his roots are. This is his home. This is his home. So I don't think it's out of the question to say Chychrun would take less than $8 million to stick around here. I think 6.5 to $8 million in that range is very likely for a guy like Chychrun. Definitely closer to 8 million, between 7 to 8, more likely than not. But once again, this is his home, so you never know. But it really does come down between him, Chabot, and Norris. You have to pick one out of those three to go. You can't keep all three. You have to sign Pinto, as we already mentioned. Greg's going to need a contract, and of course, regular, day-to-day maintenance with the roster, other players that need to be brought in. You need to have space on the cap, so you can't be cap struck, so to speak, as the only team in the National Hockey League with three defensemen making $8+ million, when this team defensively is still one of the worst in the National Hockey League. So, to answer your question, I don't see them trading Chabot with a team like Ottawa that's one of the youngest in the National Hockey League who desperately needs leaders. Chabot's the longest tenured Ottawa Senator right now. He's a leader in that locker room, a leader in the community. That's not somebody you trade unless it makes sense. And frankly, it doesn't make sense, especially since he signed to that contract. Sure, he has injury concerns, but when you play him nearly 30 minutes a night for 5 years, he's going to get fatigued. It makes sense. But Josh Norris, I don't really know what his market would look like right now. There were reports from Pignota, for example, of the fourth period, saying that there were teams interested in Norris prior to that injury. I think you could definitely move him. You might have to retain some salary. Probably not, though. I think you could probably get a decent return for him if he has another full season and healthy at that, and produces. He's still a very, very good hockey player. And then, of course, with Chychrun, I mean, you have 1 year left. You don't have much leverage after this year because he's going to be gone, right? So you kind of have to make that decision this summer, in my opinion, which puts Ottawa in a really tough spot. I don't know what they do. My bet is they keep Norris. Centers are so valuable. This is a guy they've invested a lot of money in. You keep him, you keep Chabot, you keep Sanderson, you get rid of Chychrun, and you bring in a rugged defenseman instead. Because as I already mentioned earlier in this podcast, Chabot and Chychrun bring the boat, they both bring the same thing. And with Sanderson there already, who also brings good offensive ability, I mean, the only one behind Chychrun for goals this year is Jake Sanderson. So when you have Sanderson, you have Chabot already. You need a guy that can bring some defensiveness. Chychrun seems to be the odd man out, especially since Norris again is injured. So, if Norris was not injured, I'd frankly say Norris probably gets dealt. But now, especially with an up and down year for Chychrun, he's definitely the more valuable one, and with less leverage with 1 year left on the deal, he's probably the odd man out, I'd say. Which
Yeah, I
hurts to
think
say, we'll say. I love him. It really hurts to say.
he's been a good senator, and I think it is unfortunate it didn't work out, but I tend to agree. I think I agree where if Norris was fully healthy, he's a guy you look to explore to see if a deal could be made. But I don't even know if they're going to be able to trade him simply because I don't know if he's going to be able to pass a physical in the summer when he gets traded, and if he does pass a physical, I just genuinely don't know what kind of value they'd be getting on and if it would even be worth it. And, maybe you look at it as just getting out of that cap to try and use it on the depth we've already talked about as worth it. But yeah, some Twitter makes me laugh. And it's a bit of a biosphere for sure, because you see just a few people I have a really bad habit of thinking that's what the entire fan base is thinking, because you interact with these people all day. But Thomas Chabot takes way too much crap as an
Amen.
Ottawa Senator.
Amen.
Like,
Way too much. It's
oh
ridiculous.
my, it's
Ridiculous.
crazy. You'd think
Ridiculous.
he's not an NHL level player half the time, the way people talk about it. And it's like, I've liked Chychrun. I thought he's again, I think he's had a pretty solid year. Thomas Chabot is quietly passed him in, again, like analytical category as well. He drives play better. He's got a better goals above replacement as well, which Chychrun was like leading the league at one point, but that's how hard he dropped off in the middle of the year and everything. So it's I agree where you probably do not need both of them. And I would say at that point, it's like I guess the only argument I can think of for keeping Chychrun over Shabbat is if you can get a pretty good package for Shabbat, which I think is an if just given how the narrative is right now, and also if Jacob Chychrun signs at a cheap contract that you were not expecting, and in that $6.5 million range, where he then becomes significantly cheaper than Shabbat, but not much less value. Whereas if you're just moving Shabbat to pay Chychrun $8 million, I don't really see the point. I think you just move on from Chychrun, right?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, that's very well said. I mean, they're very similar players. They both play the same style. They're both hell of a player. I mean, they're two talented players. I mean, it's a great problem to have, so to speak. You got to pick between star defenseman and star defenseman. It's not a bad situation to be in. Unfortunately, you do have to pick, though, and that's where it kind of sucks. But I do agree. I mean, Shabbat, once again, let's just take a look off the ice. Let's take a look far away from the analytics. Let's take a look at the human side of things. This team desperately needs leaders. This is a young, inexperienced team with, frankly, an identity crisis, and more so, no unison. There's no there's a lack of the it factor. And Shabbat's the type of guy that can bring that it factor. We've seen that at the World Juniors. We've seen that in the National Hockey League when he's healthy, and not playing 30 plus minutes a night. He's that guy that you can depend upon every single night. Similar to what Jake Sanderson is now doing for Ottawa, especially when Shabbat was injured this year. So I think Shabbat just brings far more to the table than Chychrun. Once again, I love Chychrun so much. If you could keep everyone, I would, but you can't. This is a cap league. So Shabbat just brings more in terms of everything. And once again, with Norris, unfortunately, you just can't really do anything with that. So you're going to have to bite the bullet. And once again, you have a year left on Chychrun's deal. You can still get a very, very good package for him. And I think you can get some NHL return for him as well. Some not just futures, first or second round pick prospects. I think you can get a solid defensive guy brought back. Look at what Calgary did with Vegas, with Noah Hanifin, for example. They traded him, and I can't pronounce his name, and I apologize. Starts with an M, a Russian defenseman to the Calgary Flames. He was playing third pairing minutes with Vegas, but only because they have a stacked blue line. So if you can find, and once again, he's been doing very, very well with Calgary, offensively, defensively speaking, he's blossomed. If you can find a diamond in the rough like that, in a situation where you really have no choice but to move Chychrun, that is a win. You don't subtract from the lineup, you add, save some money, and allocate that somewhere else. That's the only way you can make this work. If you're trading Chychrun for futures, you might as well just kind of start a rebuild because if you look at the roster right now, they have a 5 to 7 year window here where they have contracts that are either league affordable or going to be expiring within 5 to 7 years. This is your window. Take advantage.
Yeah, well said. And yeah, I'll just give a quick shout out to Jake Sanderson as well. I haven't talked to him because I know I'm going to talk about him in a couple of weeks when I start doing some player grades here, but that dude's a beast. He has had a very underrated season for the Ottawa Senators. So huge shout out to Sanderson. But no, I agree. Like, I think it's one of those things where in a perfect world, you keep everyone, but also in a perfect world, you're not on pace for 70 points or whatever it is, like it's just 75 points, I guess. Like it's just, it is unfortunate, but I think that's a good place to wrap it up. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting off season, and I do encourage Ottawa Senators fans to watch some playoff hockey, get some exciting hockey on the TV, in the next couple of months here. I know I'm absolutely pumped to get the NHL playoffs started, and hopefully one of these years, sooner than later, we get to see some Ottawa Senators hockey back in the
Praying.
playoffs too.
I am praying. We were talking about this before the show began, Alex. I mean, the fact that Brady Tkachuk, an absolute dog, a dog. Imagine this guy in the playoffs. It's such a shame we haven't seen the CDC light up for a Brady Tkachuk goal. It's gonna happen, hopefully next year, though.
Yeah, exactly. Brendan, thank you so much for joining me. Plug some stuff. Where can people find you and all you do?
Yeah, once again, thanks again for having me on. It's always a pleasure. I love the work you do, and once again, it's just great to be here. Yeah, so you guys can follow me on Twitter or sorry, Elon X @SenseTalk_. You can follow me on Instagram @SenseTalk. We're on YouTube at youtube.com/sensetalk, and our website is sensetalk.ca. We have some great articles. We have a blog there with some really, really talented writers. Check it out. And once again, yeah, thanks again for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Huge thanks to Brandon for joining me today. I hope everyone enjoyed that podcast. As I mentioned last podcast, lots still to come. And if you missed the last podcast, Hunter Hodes joined me to break down the Pittsburgh Penguins and the wild card hunt in the Eastern Conference that came out earlier this week. Wherever you're listening to this, check that out. Hopefully, going to have a big guest on next week to talk some Sens, and then I'm going to have both sides of the NHL playoffs preview as well. Wrapping it up, and then more Sens content into the off season. I've already got two guests lined up, so super excited for that. As always, you can find me on Twitter at NHL Sens and Stuff, and the podcast on Twitter at Last Word on Sens. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.